Welcome back to the Boys Dynasty Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your co-host, Josh Schaefer. Back this week with my old co-host, Sloan. It is great to see you. How you doing, Sloan?
I'm doing well, Josh. It's great to be back. We were talking a little bit before we started recording. It's nice when you and Brian or somebody else does a podcast because then I get the joy of listening to it, but I don't get the joy of making it. So now you and I back at it again. We're here.
It is. It's great to see you. It's nostalgic. You know, we've been doing this for years at this point, like three plus years.
Yeah.
The podcast's been going on. I was just asking you before we started recording, so I was waiting for your answer. How does it feel to not be doing it this year? I know you said you like to listen to it. I'm sure there's part of it that is relaxing. It weirdly takes a lot of effort to like schedule it and do it. Like it feels like a big inconvenience. So where are you at on being out for most weeks this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fun to just listen to you guys and your opinions on everything. And, you know, you say something about something that's going on with my team and I get a little chuckle out of it. Maybe I'll throw a response or a comment back in the group me and see what's happening. So it's been fun, but I'm happy to be back and doing at least this week's pod with you. We'll see how many I do going forward, especially past November 26th. Once the kid's here, we'll see how much time I have. So, yeah, but it's been fun.
How's kid prep going? Are you feeling ready for the child or scared? What is your mixture of emotions?
Yeah, I think we're pretty ready. Becca already had her baby shower, so we have all the stuff from that, just putting things together. We actually had Tommy, Alexis, and Theo over this past weekend. They stayed the night, so it was kind of fun having them over and having Theo use some of the stuff that we haven't even used yet. So we also got to see how baby proofed our house is, which is not very baby proofed. So we got to get that figured out by the time the kid's walking. But other than that, I got some painting to do and that's really about it. I mean, we're super excited and it November 26th couldn't get here soon enough. I mean, I don't know the last time I was this excited about something. And even with Mike texting me, telling me about how awful it is, I'm so excited, so looking forward to it. I don't know if I'm looking forward to the kid or if I'm looking forward to having 12 weeks off from work, but regardless, I'm looking forward to the time at home.
Wow. Yeah. That is some nice honesty. 12 weeks off of work will be pretty sick. You also don't have to give birth to a child. So,
yeah.
You know, taking care of one, obviously not easy, but giving birth to one. Yeah. That's not a hot take that sucks.
I think that's going to be the most difficult part for me. There's not a lot of difficult parts of this, obviously, because I'm not giving birth, but I think being there for Becca and giving her that support and trying not to freak out if things aren't going well in the hospital. But it's nice that there's doctors and nurses there and they know what they're doing. They've done this many times. So I'm going to try to sit back and relax and be there for Becca as emotional support. We've talked about it a lot, what our game plan is, and I think we're pretty ready. And Becca, she wants the kid out really badly. So she's gotten her fill of being pregnant. She's ready to get it out.
I mean, she better get used to it at the rate that you're planning to go. She might spend the better part of like the most of her remaining like life in her 30s and 20s and 30s being pregnant.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see how many kids we have. We'll take it one by one. I'd be interested in, you know, looking at like throwing a poll in the group and taking bets on who the next one to have a kid is, because it seems like we've all had this will be the fourth kid in not even a year and a half, right? Theo would have been May 27th. So yeah, we'll take it one by one. We'll see. We were hoping we'd have twins with the first one, but unfortunately there's just one.
Have you revealed the gender yet, or it's still a secret?
Still a secret.
Okay. This is a great time to do it if you decide. I mean, podcasts are great for announcements. So,
well, we got to wait till the kid's born because we don't know. So,
of course.
We're ready.
Okay. Well, once you find out, if you've, you know, obviously you'll find out when you see the child, but that's great.
Yeah. How are you doing? How's Seattle?
Oh, it's been great. I did my first, I had my first referee scrimmages on Sunday of this week, which was intense, dude. I'm never giving a ref shit again for the rest of my life. I
Were
swear.
you reffing like just like a men's league, or what were the players?
I was refereeing sixth grade girls
Oh, that's, I can't think
basketball.
of anything worse.
And it was like, it was competitive. The games were competitive. It wasn't, I mean, men's leagues would probably be worse, but I don't know. The parents, like, we were doing, so there was like six or seven new refs there, and we were doing like hockey style substitutions in and out, like over the course of a game, so that everybody could get experience. And there was sometimes where we were going with like a very tenured veteran ref, or, you know, at the end, they just kind of put both of us, like all new refs out there together in pairs. And dude, there is so much shit you have to pay attention to when you're a referee. It is crazy. Like the thing that's weird about it, and this is what I've been telling people, is that as I'm learning it, like when you're learning something at work, you're gonna make mistakes, but it's like a very safe environment, right? Where when you make a mistake, everyone's like, let's talk about that mistake that you made. Like, here's what you could do better. Great learning for next time. It's honestly like, in my opinion, kind of hard to fail at work for the most part, because there's somebody right above you ready to stop something that's about to be a failure right before it happens. But when you're refereeing, you're just constantly fucking up. Like, you're either missing a call, you're in the wrong position, you are not listening to the right people, you're not using the right hand signal, you're not doing the right order of operations of how to announce a foul. Like, even the very, very experienced refs, NBA refs, we see it all the time. They're fucking up all the time. So that experience, I think, is very new and very nerve-wracking, because I'm not used to like consistent failures and without the ability to like stop and assess, like, okay, what could I do better? Because there was one point where we did like 16-minute halves, nonstop reffing, like me and another guy just did it. And it, like, you could just feel it descending into chaos of just like that. Everyone knew we were first time refs. Like, that my partner's calling a technical on this sixth grader. Like, he's calling everything. Like, he is calling the game so tight. And
Did you
I'm
say
more,
something to him like,
no, I
dude?
didn't, because my nerves are so fried. I'm like, I don't know if I should be calling it as tight as he is, because this one team was playing so aggressively. Like, they were hand checking all the time. And I'm like, am I gonna call every single foul like on this team? And in my head, I'm like, no, I should let there be game flow. But I'm like, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. I should just call fouls when I see a foul. So it was a very good learning experience. If you're ever like, I want to get uncomfortable, go try being a referee.
Yeah, was there ever any like dread where it's, you're a handful of minutes into the game and you still have so much left and it's like, oh my gosh, like you were saying, you don't have the time to stop and think about, okay, how can I adjust what I'm doing? No, you just have to keep going and keep doing it. And it's like, wow, I'm really gonna get shit on for this because of how bad it is.
Yeah, there were
I mean,
moments. Yeah, because like you said, you can't think about it. Because if you start thinking about it, you're screwed, right? Because the game, you would think sixth grade girls, those games go like so slowly. The game feels like it's moving a million miles an hour, because you're just th trying to think about so many things at once. So it is kind of a, yeah, there were moments where I was like, I would realize I made a mistake and I'd be like, oh man. Or I would like turn to talk to somebody and then I would miss something that happened on the floor because I was like talking to a spectator. So I told, or not a spectator, but like one of our like refs that was more tenured. So yeah, I'll keep doing it. I'm going to keep doing it. I want to learn. I want to get better at it. But the amount of respect that I have for the craft at this point is, it's crazy. It is so hard to be a good referee. Especially in, we're doing two-man crews. So most of the games we watch are three-man crews. And in two-man crew, you're responsible for so much more of the floor. Like, you're sprinting,
So
like,
yeah, what's the tough part about it? Because I think, I mean, you're looking for fouls, obviously, off the ball fouls, ball handler fouls, things like that. There's other, I don't know. I mean, are the rules different? Are they a lot different with sixth grade girls compared to college or NBA? I mean, did a lot of that translate over?
Yeah, most of it's pretty similar to like what we would do in high school. There's some like small nuances, but like a hit on a shot is a hit on a shot, right? Like you're calling that. But the hardest part is that when you're refereeing, you don't watch the ball. Like you're not supposed to watch the ball. You're supposed to watch the area of the court that you are responsible for. And so that is very hard because you have to be aware of the ball, but you're not supposed to be watching the ball because you need to make sure like people aren't grabbing each other off ball or that there's not like any weird stuff going on or, you know, and you need to watch the secondary defender coming in on a play, like not the primary. And so things that you know, when you're watching a game, you're basically always watching the ball handler. Like maybe you'll notice like somebody on a backdoor cut or something like that. But the angles that you have on the floor are a lot more challenging to see stuff than the angles that you have on the cameras on TV is one of the bigger things too that I've noticed. Because that vertical angle is so nice to be able to see what's going on. But when you're like right in it, it's so easy just to miss stuff. And like that's whenever you play pickup, people are like, just call your own fouls because, you know, they don't want people calling it for you.
You should
But
have asked the girls to call their own fouls, get you a little help.
dude, the rest were the 6th grade girls were giving me shit. Like I had to call a double technical at one point, and these 2 girls started pushing each other. Like after this thing, the one girl, when my partner gave the tee, I was like, "What did she say?" And he was like, "Oh, she told me to open your eyes, ref." Like I'm like scared of what like high school men's basketball would be like, where people like actually, I just think of myself in high school. I remember when I was in high school, I would go to games, and I went to a Christian school, obviously. And I remember there was a moment where I was swearing so loudly at the refs that the principal had to come and get me and like pull me out and say, like, this is unacceptable behavior. Like, you need to go in there and apologize to everyone. So I guess this is my karma for my high school experience.
Yeah, well, we got the experience in college with the intramurals with how you treated referees, and it wasn't the best of treatment. So you know what it's like. And that's probably a good perspective to come in with, right? You know what the whether it's a fan, whether it's a coach, whether it's a player, you know what it's like.
Yeah, everyone needs to go ref one game and then you can shit talk refs. Like, go do it one time. Because for most people, like, the pay is shit and the hours are really inconvenient, right? So you maybe you do one game after work, you drive 30 minutes to get there, 30 minutes back to make like $40. Like, it is not a lucrative job to attract like pure people. It's just like a passion thing that people do for the most part. So yeah, just know that, especially for you guys with that are having kids, the next time you give a ref shit, you know, especially obviously kids are really young, but as you start getting into sports and stuff, it's probably just someone's dad or just a guy who wants to likes basketball, you know, like cool down. So
So your uniform, are you wearing the zebra stripes?
I have the zebra stripes. I do.
Nice.
I had to get some. Yeah. I just bought shoes this week.
Ooh, what
Cause I
kind of
have to wear
shoes did you
all
get?
blacks, just some Under Armour shoes on Amazon. I didn't want to
Nice.
spend that much.
Nice.
Cause I'm not trying to like, I mean, I'm not doing it for the money, but it would be nice to make some money. So
I mean, I think that's it's a unique perspective that not a lot of people have, being a referee, being in that position. It's just, I mean, and not a lot of people would have the guts to go out there and do that. Like you were just talking about, pay shit. It's, you know, it's not. For the most part, it's not going to be a career or anything like that. It's a passion that someone would need to have. But I don't know. Maybe I'll look into it.
Yeah, I mean, once you're a lot of the it's very interesting because there's like 8 of us who made it through all the classes and came to the first. We started off, I think, with probably 20 to 25 people. And by the end, there was only 8 of us that finished the program. But a lot of the guys were just like dads who coach sports, and then their kids are like in college now. And so they're like, you know, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm gonna figure out to do something else with my time.
Do
So,
you think reffing football would be easier or harder?
was thinking about this because now, as I'm watching sports, I'm like thinking about it from the perspective of what it would be like to be a referee in that sport. Football, I think it's easier because, like, you can throw your flag you don't have to throw your flag immediately. I'm not, maybe it's not easier. I'm sure they're both uniquely challenging.
Well, I was going to say, I'd imagine football would be much easier than basketball.
I think my instinct says yes.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of you guys out there. You can throw your flag as you think about what you saw. You don't just have to chuck it immediately. Mm-hmm. You can pick up your flag, right? Like if you're like, I don't think it was a call. There's just a lot of options to get you out of stressful situations. I think the harder part about football is probably that there's so much to watch, right? Like, cause there's 22 people out on the field and maybe like four or five refs. So like, you know, five people, but I guess for our two man crews, it's five people and it's playing basketball. So
yeah,
it's really hard. It's really fucking hard.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. You do basketball, I'll do football, and then we'll compare notes.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun activity. So sweet. Yeah, it's been good to do that this week and get set up. But
yeah, sounds like a blast. Well, let's get into some fantasy football.
Yes, I have a hard 4 o'clock stop. So we've got 25 minutes to talk about fantasy football as of right now. Sloan, obviously, there's been a lot to talk about, I think, over the last week. A lot of trades. Some interesting stuff happening in the table.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a lot of shit talk in the GroupMe. I think this is the most active the GroupMe has been in a very long time talking
But is it shit talk? It's like Anthony Richardson talk, right?
Yeah, it's like a lot of, it's like simps for Anthony Richardson, exactly. I think the best place to start is probably with last week's table. Always a good place to begin our conversation. We saw some interesting things happen with Matt benching players. You obviously having a very big week to get yourself, you know, a little bit of safety from last place. Mike having a very poor week this week. You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts, Sloan. What did you think of the table last week?
Yeah, I'm pulling it up right now, but I hate starting with my team, but that's the team I'm most familiar with. And this
Back, baby. I mean, Sloan is back, baby.
It was the best result of the season for me. Super, super happy about it. And I'll spill some secrets. My goal this season, I think every team that doesn't think they're going to make the playoffs, this is their goal. I want to finish second to last in the regular season. That's my goal, especially since I have my own first round pick next year. So just getting a little bit more margin in between me and whoever's in last, this was a big week for it. And I think as we get closer to the NFL trade deadline and then eventually our trade deadline, that's when a lot of moves are going to be made, not just by me, but by a lot of other rebuilding teams. So hopefully I can get to a point where I feel like I have enough of an advantage over the bottom tier teams that I can really start trading away some players and getting some more assets for the future. But yeah, super happy with my team last week. Injuries were not great. Ayuk, torn ACL, torn MCL. That's tough. But yeah, other than that, I mean, yeah, I'm happy with where I'm at. It was a good week. Looking at some of the other guys as I pull this up, I mean, when I look at Colin and Austin, I just feel so – Colin especially because he came in last season, it's tough to see it happen again. And I really think he's going to be there. He's going to be the guy. You look at the margin, I mean, it's 16 points between him and Matt.
Yeah,
and it's not going to get any better. If you look at his roster, he's going to be going to, well, it's not Waffle House anymore. What did we decide on? Does he actually get to choose and then it gets to be approved?
Yeah, I think the reason his team name is Collins River Cruise is because of the option that they talked about regarding like.
But listen, there's no way that's realistic. After that episode, when he came on and he was talking about it, I looked at Google Maps and I was looking at the path. There's no way he could do it. In one shot, he would definitely have to get out of the boat. And I just think logistically, I don't think it's going to be possible.
There's so like waterfalls on that, like, right?
Yeah.
Like,
that's what I'm saying. There's like dams, dam type waterfalls. So I think it'd be cool to see him do it legally. I don't know if he's allowed to do it, but maybe think about something else. Looking at some of the other guys, Tommy coming in first again. Tom Strojans, we've said it again, or we say it all the time in the group me, it's inevitable. A four-peat would be absolutely insane. And at this point, he's at the top of the table with 59 points. Mike is at 44 in fourth place, the last playoff spot. And really, if Tommy gets in the playoffs, we've seen what he can do, and it's looking like he's going to make the playoffs if you look at the standings right now. So I'm super excited about that. Josh, consistently up there. You had that one bad week in week five, but I think, like everyone else has said on the podcast, you're a lock for the playoffs. And then, yeah, just sort of average performances by everyone else. There's Tommy, Josh, Brian, Mike, and Dylan, and then I would say everyone else, with Colin being really far down at the bottom. So three tiers. Those top four teams, or those top five teams, the next four teams, and then Colin. So, yeah, I like that teams are starting to rebuild. You look at Austin, you look at Matt with benching Lamar Jackson, trying not to do as well. It's fun when there are this many teams trying to get lower in the table because they know they don't have a shot for the playoffs. And being one of those teams, it has been exciting. The first three seasons of the league, I was trying to compete, missed the playoffs the first season, last two seasons made the playoffs and really competed. That was fun. This is a different kind of fun. So I'm glad that this is enjoyable too. No plans to quit the league right now. We'll talk after my kids born, but yeah, I thought it was an interesting little turn of events this week, and some not great injuries. I know we're going to talk about some real NFL trade news later on, but yeah, it's fun to see how everything's playing out, especially now that we're halfway through the season.
Yeah, I totally agree. There's great points across the board. A lot of low point totals this week. I think this maybe was our lowest cumulative point total of any week so far this season.
Yeah, those buys are really building up.
Yeah, you can start to see it come through. And to your point too, Colin is so firmly in last place. I think it's going to bring a very unique perspective on the last, you know, 6-7 weeks of the regular season, in that teams feel comfortable tanking. And I think it's a point we didn't really touch on so far, but Matt pulled players on Sunday night or Monday night. He pulled Lamar Jackson. I think he pulled another player in the game. I forget who, because he knew Colin was going to be second to last if Matt finished last. And I think what that means is for the playoff race is if you're one of those teams that's maybe flirting with the edge, maybe you, obviously you're going pretty much full tank at this point, not full tank, but full retool, but maybe a team like Austin that's, you know, 9 points out of that last playoff spot, it's going to be so much harder to get into the playoffs because those teams that are on the bottom could actually start tanking this early in the season. Now, I think it's important to talk about personally, Matt's decision to pull the players. I didn't want to do it in the group me because I think this is a better scenario for it. I think it is a very bold strategy. Now you look at the list. Matt, 16 points clear of last place. Yeah, that's great. Colin also has Puka, Jonathan Brooks, and Chris Olave all injured right now. Those are three very, very startable fantasy football players. I've said in the past, I'm worried about, you know, Matt having to do Waffle House. I think with his, like, I think having diabetes, like doing Waffle House is truly dangerous. But Matt is really pushing that by pulling his players this early in the season. It is week 7. And so, Matt, I really want you to not have to do Waffle House. But if later in the season, Colin makes a comeback and you finish last, that's really going to hurt. And I don't know. I think it's a little early to do it personally. But obviously, you're a tanking team now, which is great because we finally have some balance on this perspective. You and I used to be the two playoff teams. Now, Brian traded out for you literally in the playoff standings and on the podcast. Yeah. As a tanker, what do you think about Matt pulling players from his roster?
I'm fine with it. That's the risky run, right? He has a lot of first-round picks next season, next draft. He obviously has his own or else he wouldn't be tanking. And he also has Collins. And I think it's exciting to see. If I were in his position, I would still wait a little bit to start tanking. Just like you said, Colin can have some players coming back. You don't know what's going to happen to your own team, whether he's trying to Because you would think at some point, if he's trying to look each week during the games, once they've started and they get later into the day, whether he can pull players, which I think is what he did with Lamar Jackson, because they played, they were the Monday night. Were they Monday night or Sunday night? They're Monday night, right?
Monday
So he had time to think about that. And I think he's going to try to do that each week going forward. So it's not like he's making the decision before each week starts. I think he's just slowly looking at where each team is at, looking at projected points after, you know, the 1 p.m. games, looking at the 4 p.m. games as those start to end. And if he has players in the Sunday night game or the Monday night game, thinking about pulling them. And trying to be a little more strategic than just saying at the outset of each week, hey, I'm going to tank. So I don't have a problem with it. I think that 16-point gap is enormous.
It's huge.
Even with some of Collins' players coming back, because you have to look at some of the others' teams. Now, Austin's team doesn't look great. Ongood's team doesn't look great. Those are really the only two teams when they're giving a full effort that – they would finish below Colin, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So you would think, I don't know. I mean, the most that Colin would get each week is three table points.
We would have said that about Ongood going into the season, though. I mean, Ongood, we were like lock for last place.
I agree.
Not even close.
But we've seen Colin's performances.
Colin's team at this point is maybe the worst team we have ever seen in our fantasy football league. He has 13 table points through 7 weeks, meaning he is averaging less than 2 table points a week. You automatically get 1 for finishing last place. So his average finish is less than second to last place.
Right.
It's insane.
Look at where he's finished. He's finished last, second to last. What would that be? Fourth to last.
Yeah.
Last and then second to last. He's finished last 3 times, second to last twice.
And he would have finished last this week if Matt actually started the players. So
right.
He got 1 additional pity table point this week.
Right. So that's why I think you look at his past performance. Yeah, he has some players coming back. It could help him, but I just don't think there are enough teams in the league that he could beat each week where he could start getting close to Matt or Ongood, because Ongood's down there at the same amount of points as Matt. But if Matt can be below Ongood using the strategy that he showed off this week with pulling a player in one of the later slot games, then I think it's a good strategy. I'm not going to do that just because I don't feel as comfortable. Becca would kill me if I had to go to Waffle House. So
she
I don't even want
to
flirt with
that.
Yeah,
if she found out that you tried to position yourself.
Well, I told her. I mean, I told her my goal is to come in second to last, but I'm okay if I mess up a little bit. If I come in third to last or fourth to last, that's fine. Because, you know, I don't want to go to Waffle House. But it might be after this week, if Colin comes in last again and I have another stellar week, I might look at my roster and say, hey, like some of these guys are going to be resting on the bench while I have some empty roster spots. So I don't know. I like it.
Yeah, it's a fun dynamic to have this season. It's nice to see the playoff picture get mixed up a little bit. Sorry that that comes at your expense. I think it's a good transition to the fact that you're trying to do what you can to salvage this season for you. Obviously, you made that big week 1 trade to trade for Joe Mixon, giving up a 2027 first, and then quickly realizing that this was not going to be your year to contend for the playoffs. We saw a trade from you this week. You had a lot of suitors for Tyreek. Obviously, we had our drama over the weeks of dealing with, you know, what we would give up for him. Where are you at, Sloan, on the tank? You know, are you trying to clean house fully, mix in McCaffrey? I know we've talked high level about these players being available, but, you know, how do you feel about the Tyreek trade? Where are you at more broadly on your team?
I have some guys that are my building blocks for the next era is how I like to phrase it. So they're going to stay on my roster. I'm sure you guys can guess who some of them are, but I would say most everyone else on my roster is available. Just trying to look at their ages, look at their contracts with their actual teams, and trying to get things lined up so that everything can come together all at once, and then I can have a really competitive team for one or two seasons at least. The Tyreek trade, you guys talked about it on prior episodes. You know, you had submitted an offer to me that I liked.
It was a good offer.
I verbally accepted it. And the funny part was, on Tuesday when we were, or Monday, was it Monday? When did I trade him away? Today's Wednesday.
It would have been Monday because I asked you for more time on Monday morning.
When we were discussing those, you had gotten back to the point where you were going to give me that original offer.
I thought about it. I really, because I was like panicking, because I was like, I don't want to just lose this trade because I don't right. have time to think about it. So I knew I had to dangle it back out there to make sure I could get the extra time of like, I'm thinking about this.
Yeah. And surprisingly, I still, even if you would have made that a firm offer, I think I still would have taken Matt's deal.
Seriously?
I really, yeah, because the years were, I wanted the years that Matt was offering. So I'm happy with what I got. Josh, you texted me. Matt obviously texted me. Mike, he and I had some conversations, and Brian.
Just a garbage offer from Mike, by the way. Just absolute trash.
Yeah, it involved Jameson Williams, so I'm really happy I didn't
yeah,
take
you,
that one.
Yeah, great turn down from you there.
Well,
yeah.
It was funny because he sent me the offer. We had like had this discussion maybe a week ago, and it included him sending Jameson Williams to me, and I'm like, dude, I'm trying to like rebuild. Like, I don't need more running backs on my roster. I need to like get ready for the future. Young wide receivers, I can't take running backs. And he's like, well, Jameson Williams is a wide receiver, so. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. So then I had to reevaluate.
Tells you how good he is, though. If you don't know what position he plays, you probably don't want to give up Tyreek Hill for him.
Yeah. Well, and I also saw the news, whether it was today or yesterday, about him Jameson Williams getting suspended for two games. And, you know, it was J-Mo or whatever, however you pronounce it. And I'm like, who the hell is that? And then it hit me like 2 hours ago today. I was like, oh, cool. Dodging a bullet there. That's kind of nice. So, yeah, I mean, I love fantasy football, but apparently there's still some things that I don't keep up with. But, yeah, I felt good about the trade. You know, mm-hmm. Tyreek Hill, he's a, what is he, 30.6 years old?
30.6, baby. Old maybe 30.7 now. He might be, but he might have gone up another 0.1 since we started trade talks.
He's an old wide receiver, so I'm happy I got rid of him for what I did. And you look at some of his performances over the season, this season specifically, and he hasn't really helped me that much. So I thought, you know what? I'm not going to go to Waffle House. I look at Collins' table points, so I'm okay with trading him away.
Yeah.
All right, let's get through some other trades. What do we have next? Oh, we had one involving you, Josh, and Colin.
Yes.
DJ Moore back.
DJ Mid is I'm trying to change his nickname on the Sleeper app to DJ Mid. And that's after acquiring him. So, you know, that's my stance. The timing could not have been better for me on that trade. This is the quickest Colin and I have ever come to agreement on a trade. Normally it takes us like hours of constant back and forth. A 2025 first that was mine, and a 2026 second that is Brian's. I think relatively safe to assume that the 2025 first is going to be late this year. Like at least it'll be in the latter four picks. I think I'm pretty much in the playoffs unless something insane happens. And then the 2026 second from Brian, you know, could be in the first half, but probably Brian's team probably not going to be a truly bad, bad team next year. I think he's still probably in the, you know, mid second mm-hmm. best case scenario. So I like the deal. I feel like the players I get at that, and I get a third back with DJ Moore from Colin, which next year could also be a very good third. That could be like a top of the third. So I like DJ Moore. I've had him on my team before. I've traded him to Colin and now I have him back. I think his ceiling is very well defined. He is a 27-year-old receiver who is a wide receiver two with weekly wide receiver one upside, but not like elite wide receiver one. I do not think he is an alpha one. Caleb Williams is playing better, but I don't think it's going to be enough for him. Mm-hmm. So the trade, like I said, comes at great timing for me. Godwin gets injured in the last 50 seconds of a dumb fucking game. Todd Bowles is an absolute idiot after losing Mike Evans, still playing his starters with 40 seconds left. season-ending injury for Godwin, who was the wide receiver two for the year, which is a brutal loss for my team. I don't think DJ Moore is going to be the wide receiver two the rest of the year, but I think he is a good enough replacement. I also have a lot of depth. Cooper Kupp coming back. It's I think of it as the next era of my team, as you talked about, Sloan. Mm-hmm. Guys like Adams, Kupp, Kamara, Jones, they will start to fade away inevitably within the next year or two. And I think in the next year or two, DJ Moore is still a great starter who I'm going to be happy to be putting out there on a weekly basis. Okay. So feels like
I had some conversations with Colin back in early September about DJ Moore, and I had offered Colin my 2025 first and I believe my 2026 second for DJ Moore.
Wow.
Colin said not enough, and he comes back and I even said I'll add a 2027 second to that deal, and Colin said
seriously
no. And then Colin comes back and says he would need a 2025 first, 2027 first, and then a 2026 second and a 2027 second. And I'm like, hell no, I'm not doing that. But yeah, it's I just wanted to remind Colin of that. So
that's the experience of owning DJ Moore, yeah. Because you're like, this is the year he is breaking out, you know? And I think the price that I acquired DJ Moore at right now is the, we know he's not breaking out. Like, we know what he is. And you're going to get three or four more years of that. And that's great. You know, three or four more years of wide receiver two with wide receiver one potential is, I think he's kind of a bargain asset. We'll see.
Before you leave, what are your quick thoughts on the Mike and Austin trade from last night?
I like the trade, honestly. I know you don't like it, but I think with what Brian's point was great. I was just more stirring shit up in the group me of like just saying dumb stuff. But if I'm Austin and my team sucks, Austin's team is bad. It's a bad team. Yeah. His QBs put up a combined 3.8 points last week. I want the volume of picks. Now, these fourth rounders, we're seeing some of them play out. It seems like there's some value in fourth round running backs that, you know, you could potentially get a starter. The Bucky Irvings, Kyron Williams, like there are guys there that are available. So I don't know. It's a crapshoot. 2027 second is super far away. Time value of picks. Sloan, you and I were talking about this week.
Yeah, that's a long ways. I don't think that is applicable in fantasy football.
It is so applicable. Yeah, it is.
I don't think it is, man. Cause the reason time value of money exists is because of like the discount rate and inflation. Like that shit doesn't work. Like it's still a first round pick regardless of the year.
No.
It doesn't devalue into 2 seconds.
But when you pick a player, the odds that player is immediately good, very low. Typically, if it's a good player, they take 1-2 years to become a good player. Sometimes even longer than that. So that is the, like, if you have a 2025 first, you know that I'm picking the player this year. In a year, 2 years, I'm going to know if they're good or bad. If I have a 2027 first, I have to wait 2 years, and then I might have to wait 2 more years to actually know how good that player is, right? It matters. It totally matters. I'll trade you a 2027 first for a 2025 first right now. Yeah.
Okay. We'll see.
Let me know if you're interested. Yeah, I'll do that deal with you.
All right, Josh, I'm going to finish this off. You get back to work, buddy.
No. I have one more thing I need to do.
What do you got?
Mike's Corner. For this week. I know he probably thought that me just talking about his garbage trade was the corner. That was me just throwing some shade at him. I put some thought into this one. Mike's team, sneaky, not that good. You know, we went into the season and we said, oh man, this team is young. It's great. I think, it's still a good roster. But my official comp for Mike's team right now, Dylan's team circa 2021, where we were looking at it like, oh my gosh, look at all those young guys. I want that roster so badly. But you go down the list and you're like, is that a championship team? You know, it's a lot of good young wide receiver twos, Drake London, wide receiver one right now, but so touchdown dependent. Nico Collins, absolute stud for sure. But you get into guys like James Cook, David Montgomery, Tank Dell, stinker.
Tank Dell.
Stinker. Najee Harris, not someone you really want to start. Zay Flowers, fine. Deontay Johnson, fine. Garrett Wilson on the bench right now. A lot of guys that you loved heading into the season, But as they started to play, you're like, you know, maybe I do like Tyreek Hill a little bit more playing with Tua. Obviously, Tyreek not great with these backup quarterbacks, but it's a good reminder about the importance of production versus potential. And, you know, some of the guys on Mike's team have been good, but there's a reason he's in the fourth spot in the playoff race. So, you know, if you're looking at your team this week, guys, and you're thinking, man, my team's not very good, just know that Mike's team might not be very good either.
That was great, Josh. Thank you for that.
Yeah. All right. I need to run, Sloan. It's been wonderful chatting with you. Good luck on the rest of the podcast. Let's do this again soon.
All right. See you, bud.
See you, buddy.
All right. Now we're to the solo portion of the podcast where you guys get my stupid thoughts about the league. And I wanted to finish up the trade analysis over the past week. And there were two more trades that I have yet to give my opinion on. Going back to the trade between Austin and Mike. I know I talked about it a little bit in the group me, but and with Josh here now. And Austin sort of talked about it a little bit when I had jokingly made the same offer to him. But it we don't have roster expansion anymore. So that is the one thing that I think about is you can only roster so many guys. Austin gave away one pick and received seven picks in return. So he netted six picks out of that. So that's six guys that you're going to have to put on your roster that you don't currently have space for. Are those guys going to be more valuable than the guys that you're going to have to drop to roster those draft picks? And I don't know if they are. I mean, it's like Brian talked about it a little bit with just the how much of a crapshoot it is after the first round and even beginning of the second round. But I just don't know if it makes a lot of sense to split an asset like a second rounder into seven separate individual assets consisting of third round picks and fourth round picks. So that's sort of my thought on it. I know that it was a 2027 second round, but 2027 could be a hot draft class. And I think that's something that you need to consider when you're thinking about the value of these future picks. I do recognize that a 2025 pick is more than likely going to be more valuable than a 2026 pick or a 2027 pick or any other pick in the future. But I just don't know if the same logic from, time value money, we could talk about that. But regardless, you got to look at some of the players that are coming out into these drafts in the future. And a lot of that is a guessing game. You think about Arch Manning being one of those. He's going to be a junior next season. So he's going to be eligible, a true junior. He's going to be eligible to come out of college and go into the NFL for the 2026 draft. But especially in this day and age, he might not do that. He could stay the extra year, his fourth year at Texas. I'm sure he's making great NIL money. He obviously comes from the Manning family. So I'm sure that financially, he might not have as big of an incentive to go to the NFL after his junior year in college. So then you are into that guessing game of, okay, if I'm looking more than 2 years down the road, am I actually going to be able to know if someone's coming out? So I don't know. Just my thought is I don't like that trade for Austin. I think Mike got a heck of a value out of it. And I'm interested to see if there's going to be more trades like that in the future this season, where you just have that many assets on one side with just a single asset on the other, where you're really trying to split the value and determine whether a bunch of third and fourth round picks are actually worth more than one second round pick. But moving on, we had a trade between Mike and Brian. Mike gave Sean Tucker, running back for Tampa Bay, and Brian gave 300 fab. Sean Tucker, I believe, I'm trying to pull up his stats right now. I believe he had a big game this past week. And so that was 2 weeks ago. So against New Orleans in week six, he had put up 32 points with one touchdown, two touchdowns, one rushing and one receiving. And you look at the depth chart with where he's at, you know, you got Rashad White and Bucky Irving ahead, and then Sean Tucker, that third. I think 300 fab, I actually don't think it's that bad of a trade for Mike getting, or Brian getting Sean Tucker. I like that a lot. Fab, we've talked about it a lot. I don't think people utilize it as much as they could, but sometimes you get to the end of the season. I think you look at where I was at last season. Sometimes you don't end up spending it and you think, well, could I have made a trade for a player or something like that earlier in the season? So I like the use of Fab for Brian getting Sean Tucker out of that. I think it's a great deal. I also wanted to talk about the DeAndre Hopkins trade in real life to the Chiefs. Josh had talked about it a little bit before he hopped off. Good timing for him with Chris Godwin being out for the rest of the season. You'd think that Hopkins' value is going to go up a decent amount. It was pretty low in Tennessee just with the quarterback issues that they've been having. And you look at some of the receivers that that are on Kansas City now after some of the injuries that they've had, and DeAndre Hopkins should have a lot of opportunity, should have decent targets. We all know he's talented. If he gets in there and learns the system and gets the opportunities, I think there's going to be some value there. But you look at his age, he's 32 years old. He's not getting any younger. So I see that Josh threw him up on the trade block, but I don't know if anybody's going to bite. He's getting old. He's 2 years older than Tyreek Hill. So we'll see how he performs. But other than that, I'm happy the league is still super involved. I'm excited to see what happens going forward. I think the mix of the teams among the table right now is exciting, especially with Colin being so far down. No offense, Colin, but just looking at the strategies among me, Matt, Ongood, and Austin, whether we want to tank and how much to tank to not risk having to be at the bottom of the table at the end of the regular season. But I'm excited for everything we have in store. Feel free, if anyone's interested on any of the players on my team, reach out. I'm a rebuilder right now, so let me know. I'm open to talk. Other than that, I got nothing. God bless, guys.